my name is Genevieve, and I'll be hosting Peace, Love, and Jenny on CFRC 101.9 FM on Saturday evenings at 8 p.m. We'll be exploring everything from pop and soul to funk, jazz, and even a touch of hip-hop. Music that spans decades but all connects through good vibes, peace and love, and of course, a little bit of me, Jenny. See you there!
You're listening to Kingston's only campus community radio station, broadcasting 24/7, 365 on 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca. Tune in for the best local programming.
Good morning. It is 11 a.m. on Friday, January 30th, and you're tuned in to CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and this is Kingston Currents. CFRC's news programming is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, and the Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. In today's episode, we'll be diving into the second Spirit of Winter Festival in the heart of downtown next week, the recently approved 2026 city budget, a milestone in Kingston's local film industry, a new era for a local museum, and more. Without further delay, let's get into it. Starting February 1st, Spirit of Winter is taking over Springer Market Square with illuminated forest trails, skating, fire pits, and a brand new snow dome village offering cozy, heated spaces and treats from local businesses. This marks the second festival after a magical launch last year, bringing people together in the heart of the city during the winter months. Downtown Kingston events manager Sandy Griffiths sat down with CFRC to share more about this year's event. Last year's launch was truly magical. What did you take away from that first year, and what was the thought process going into planning this year?
Yes, so Spirit of Winter is going to look a little different this year. But I think what we learned from last year is that people really are looking for things to do in the winter. People want to get out. They want to spend time with friends and family. And so we're giving them a great reason to do that. Last year, Spirit of Winter really revolved around the projected animation that we were able to do because of a grant. This year, not having that grant, we've sort of pivoted a little, but what remains is a really fun opportunity to get outside and enjoy winter and all that winter has to offer. It's not going anywhere anytime soon, so we might as well get outside and celebrate it.
Mm-hmm. And there's a long list of activities on the docket there. What's new this year and what can folks expect?
Yes, we have lots of fun things for folks to do. Our s'mores pop-ups were the star of the show last year, which was a little bit surprising, but so much fun. So people will still have an opportunity to hang out around a wood-burning fireplace. We'll have s'mores pop-ups. Of course, there's the skating, and we offer skate rentals for those of you who don't have skates at your disposal. Our Enchanted Forest is back again this year, and we were able to add a few fun elements to it. So, we have little surprises all through the forest, which are really fun to discover. And then new this year, we have our Snow Dome Village. So in the amphitheater of City Hall, which is sort of that area around the Market Street side of City Hall where you go down the steps, we've built what we're calling a Snow Dome Village. So we have three beautiful domes that are heated. And essentially what you can do is book a time with friends and family. It's a 60-minute time window where you can enjoy the dome. We have food add-ons, so you can have yummy treats and hot drinks from some of our local restaurants. There's a heater in there, Bluetooth speaker, blankets, pillows, card games. So it's really just a nice opportunity and sort of a unique experience in the winter.
Awesome. And I was going to mention within that Snow Dome Village, we also have an art installation, kind of keeping up that tradition from last year. I was wondering if you could share a little bit about that.
Yes. So we have two fun art installations this year. Back in 2023, we did an event called Wawa Tag, working with our friends in the Indigenous community. And we had a number of icebergs in the fountain in Confederation Park. And they were lit to sort of mimic the northern lights. Some of those icebergs, you'll find them in Snow Dome Village. So we're bringing them back. And what we're also doing is we're giving people an opportunity who are either enjoying one of the snow domes or just wandering through the forest to hear again, or possibly for the first time, those Indigenous stories that were part of Wawa Tag. So there'll be QR codes all over you can scan. And we have a number of Indigenous stories told by Indigenous storytellers, which I think just brings a nice element to the festival. And then our friends at KCFF, so the Kingston Canadian Film Festival, and their mascot for this year is Conrad the Raccoon. And Conrad is very adorable. He is an almost 14-foot raccoon. And we're so, so happy that he's visiting the Enchanted Forest throughout Spirit of Winter. So you'll see Conrad on all of the marketing materials for this year's film festival. But Conrad will be live on location in the square throughout February. And again, we're so thrilled that we have such a wonderful relationship with KCFF, as well as Raw Design, who initially designed Conrad. But he's a treat to see. I think he'll be a fun selfie station for sure.
Awesome. And how can folks enjoy Spirit of Winter, secure their spot in Snow Dome Village, all that good stuff?
Yes. So for all of the information on Spirit of Winter Enchanted, everyone can visit downtownkingston.ca, and that is really a great resource for everything to do with the festival, from the times for the s'mores pop-ups, for skate rental times and rates. And if you're interested in booking one of the snow domes, you can do that right on the site as well. Like I said, there are food add-ons, and we're really excited about that that experience this year. And some of the feedback that we're getting is really positive already. So I think it's just a fun way for people to get out of their house in February and enjoy all the good things about winter.
Awesome. And I was going to ask a little bit about that behind the scenes. You're in the midst of setup right now. How's it going? And what are you hearing from people as they're kind of walking by and seeing it all get put together?
Yes. Yeah, so we started the setup on Monday. The snow domes sort of went in first, and then we started on the Enchanted Forest, which is all set up along Market Street. Of course, we get people who walk through all the time, and they're super excited. A lot of people who remember it from last year who were like, yay, I'm so glad this is back. It really does turn Market Street into a sort of magical place. But yeah, lots of curiosity about the snow domes, and definitely excitement that the forest is back. I'm going to head back there now, and we'll see what's happening, what people think of Conrad. Everything launches everything launches February 1st, which is Sunday evening, and it'll run through until the 16th, which is Family Day.
Once again, that was Sandy Griffiths with Downtown Kingston speaking about Spirit of Winter, the winter festival lighting up downtown from February 1st through to February 16th. More details, schedules, and booking information are available at downtownkingston.ca/spiritofwinter. Another year, another city budget passed, this time with a 3.75% property tax increase for Kingstonians. Mayor Brian Patterson proposed the 2026 budget under the authority of the Strong Mayor Powers, which were put in place last spring. Patterson's total municipal budget comes in at $530 million. Patterson says this budget was a challenge, but landed on the right balance.
I think it's fair to say, without exaggeration, this was an incredibly challenging budget process. I think everybody around the table is aware of the cost pressures that we are facing as a municipality. the same time understanding that cost of living continues to be a major priority and concern for our residents. So being able to find the line between those two was very difficult. I think it caused a lot of work, a number of different options and ideas that we had to work through. But again, this was a team effort with staff. And so I think that we've got it right.
After more than 6 hours of deliberation over two nights, council heard from external organizations including Kingston Police, Tourism Kingston, and the Southeast Public Health Unit, followed by presentations from internal city departments. Major spending items in this year's budget include $75 million for road repair and maintenance, along with $10.1 million for supportive housing. An additional $2.5 million will be used to operate new transitional housing, with four new sites expected to open in 2026. Housing and road conditions remain longstanding concerns for many Kingstonians. Roughly half of the 3.75% tax increase is driven by rising police and fire service costs. The Kingston police budget will increase by 6% this year. While notable, it's significantly lower than last year's 13.7% increase, which sparked widespread debate both inside and outside council chambers. Another topic of interest for council and community members alike was the impact tariffs would have on this year's budget. Treasurer Desiree Kennedy says the anticipated cost increases largely failed to materialize. The most significant impact was tied to the city's last electric bus purchase, with tariffs adding about 1%, roughly $17,000 to the cost. When it came time for final approval, only two amendments were brought forward. Councillor Jimmy Hassan proposed a freeze on council raises.
We know this is a difficult time for many households. Costs are rising, budget are tight, and people are asking how government at every level can help ease the pressure rather than add to it. Freezing our wages is one small but meaningful way we can contribute. It allows the city to focus its resources where they matter most, on essential services, long-term investment, and keeping tax increase as low as possible. This decision is about being careful with the public money and doing our part to support the broader financial health of the city. This amendment reflects how we see our role as elected official. We are here to serve, to listen, and to make choices that put the community first, especially when times are challenging. By voluntarily freezing our wages, we are sharing in the responsibility of managing these pressure and helping the city move forward in a thoughtful and steady way. That is the intention behind this motion and why we believe it is the right step at this time. Also, we'd like to show the support and solidarity with the mayor's decision to freeze his pay and all the other employees of the city who's non-union employees. Working together for the people, it is the greatest thing. And I really want to appreciate Mayor Brian Patterson and the team to be agree on to freeze their salaries increase this year.
The second amendment, introduced by Councillor Gregory Ridge, allocated an additional $100,000 in grant funding from the Working Fund Reserve to the City of Kingston Arts Fund.
So with the conclusion of CCAF review and the approval of the new CCAF framework, this additional investment, which is a one-time thing, will enable artists to achieve more goals in terms of increasing access and inclusivity, supporting artists, fostering creativity and community engagement, building capacity and resiliency. One of the things that I highlighted earlier on is that arts and culture is often something that's looked at in terms of adjustments that need to be made, and for a number of reasons. There's no criticism there, Your Worship. But also that when I think about Kingston, and I think about a space that is defined by the cultural works that come out of it, and how we punch far above our weight in terms of cultural impact, and so I am very happy to put forward this amendment. I think it will do a great deal of good. It will help to see some of those intended outputs for CCAF for this year.
Both amendments pass unanimously. With that, council approved the 2026 city budget, the final budget of this council's term. The Museum of Healthcare is entering a new chapter, announcing it will now be known as the Canadian Museum of Healthcare, a name change that reflects the museum's growth and an expanding vision for its future. Located in the Ann Bailey Building on the Kingston General Hospital site, the museum explores the history of healthcare from the 18th century to the modern era. While rooted in Kingston, its exhibits already tell stories from across the country, highlighting key developments in national medical history. Anna Collette, Programming and Communications Coordinator with the Canadian Museum of Healthcare, spoke to the decision to change the name.
This has been a long time coming because our collection is actually quite national. We have over 35,000 artifacts in our collection, and it's the largest collection of medical artifacts in Canada. So we thought it was a great time to, with the new year, to start aligning ourselves with our collection and our actual outreach.
Collette says visitors shouldn't expect a dramatic shift in the museum's direction. The gallery already features artifacts and stories from across Canada, tracing the progress of healthcare nationally, also making the new name a more accurate reflection of what the museum already offers. Collette shared some of the museum's current offerings.
So with our national collection, we can certainly reach within our own collection as well. One example I can think of is a pair of dentures that was made by a man in British Columbia, and he didn't want to pay for his dentures, so he actually went and shot a deer and filed down the teeth to make a pair of deer teeth dentures. And that's another interesting artifact we have that's from British Columbia. One exhibit we have focuses on vaccination and immunization, so it takes quite a large scope because it looks at cases of different diseases like polio, diphtheria, and smallpox, and how that has changed since vaccination programs have been introduced. So it takes quite a large scope, and we have an artifact called the Iron Lung, which was built in Toronto, and it's quite the star artifact at the museum. It was used for children who had polio who couldn't breathe on their own. It's from the 1930s before a vaccination was introduced, so it really shows a time before vaccines.
Looking ahead, the Canadian Museum of Healthcare will continue the work it has always done, all while embracing new opportunities to tell an even broader range of stories from Canada's healthcare past.
So we're hoping it brings a bit more attention to healthcare history and also our role in Kingston and reaching even further to national scope. So starting in Kingston, we've always been deeply rooted in Kingston, but hoping to branch out a little bit. The Canadian Museum of Healthcare is open Wednesday to Friday, 10 to 4 during the winter. And starting in June, we're open every day from 10 to 4. And students with their IDs, admission is $5.
Before we get into more local news, I'm going to turn to your weather and traffic report for this morning with CFRC's Jesse Bell.
This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Friday, January 30th, daytime high of minus 11, feeling closer to minus 20. More snow in the forecast. Not a ton of accumulation, but we will have snow falling on the 30th of January. Saturday, January 31st, daytime high of minus 10, feeling closer to minus 12. Otherwise, it is sunny. And we get our first single-digit negative temperature day coming up on Sunday, February 1st, daytime high of minus 7, only going to feel like minus 9, practically balmy compared to everything that came before it. And then Monday, February 2nd, daytime high of minus 5, overnight low of minus 11, with a little bit of snow forecasted for the afternoon. This is your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. As a reminder, winter parking restrictions are in effect for January and February, which bans any on-street overnight parking in the City of Kingston. The rules will lax on March 1st, when overnight street parking will only be banned when the weather permits it. Here are some road closures for this week. Aberdeen Street, William 2 Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Berry Street, Queen to Colborne is closed for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street. Market Street, King to Ontario, is closed beginning on January 26th at 7 a.m. to February 20th at 11 p.m. for the Spirit of Winter event. And in terms of other delays, just the one to report, Front Road, Sand Bay to Country Club, Expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main for Utilities Kingston. Traffic will be reduced to one lane in each direction. Please be aware of lane shifts, traffic speed limits, and share the lane signage.
Thank you, Jesse. Now back to more local news. Council has unanimously approved a motion directing staff to examine the feasibility of free or no-fee public transit as part of the city's ongoing transit review. The motion, brought forward by Councillor Ryan Boehm, responds to longstanding questions from residents about whether Kingston could implement a fare free transit system. In a short pitch to Council, Boehm outlined why he felt the review was worth including.
It's just providing this extra information for a more holistic review. And almost people have usually get the emails about, like, why don't we do this? And other cities are doing this. And when you ask those questions, the first thing that comes back is, what's the cost? You know, what are the benefits? What's the total cost? So it's as simple as that. This doesn't commit us to anything other than getting some more information from city staff on a review of transit that was already ongoing anyways. So it just gives us better information going forward.
As Boehm stated, the review will be conducted for informational purposes and will focus on understanding how fare-free systems operate in other cities, as well as the potential implications, costs, and applicability of such a model for Kingston Transit. The feasibility of free transit has not previously been formally studied by the City of Kingston. Findings related to the free or no-fee transit review will be included as part of the broader Kingston Transit Service Review, which is currently underway. Council has unanimously approved a motion calling for a comprehensive review of accessible transportation options across the city. The motion, brought forward by Councillor Brandon Tozzo, directs city staff to examine how existing accessible transit services are working and identify ways to improve and simplify access for residents who rely on them. The city currently subsidizes Kingston Access Bus to provide accessible transportation alongside conventional Kingston Transit services. In 2025, the city also introduced an accessible taxi program through the Kingston and Area Taxi Licensing Commission, designed to enhance service options available to riders. Since then, additional private accessible transportation services have become available. The city is also exploring the implementation of an on-demand transit service in rural areas, which would include an accessible fleet, as early as late 2026. The approved motion calls for staff to complete a board review of all accessible transportation options, including existing subsidies, with the goal of maximizing access for residents and streamlining how people navigate available services. Councillor Tozzo stated the following before council before the vote.
Today, Kingston has multiple accessible transportation options, Kingston Access Bus, Kingston Transit, and the Accessible Taxi Program, which was introduced in 2025. Private accessible providers and soon potentially on-demand transit services in rural areas. Each of these services exists because we as a council care about accessibility. At its core, accessible transportation is the difference between independence and isolation, between being able to participate in community life or being left behind by systems that are simply too hard to navigate. When the ATP program was introduced in 2025, there were hopes that this option would fill another gap. This program has been used, and it's made a real difference for residents who need the more flexible schedule than bus services can provide. I think its uptake demonstrates demand, but it also highlights the need for clearer rules, better integration with other services, better eligibility, and a thoughtful approach to how the city coordinates and manages accessible transportation going forward. There are many options for accessibility, but eligibility rules are often unclear. Booking processes are inconsistent. I think that we've all heard from constituents about that. Coverage and affordability vary depending on which phone number you call. And for some, you're already living with mobility challenges, cognitive barriers, illness, or age-related changes. That complexity can be overwhelming. And services that exist in silos really don't help anyone. Accessibility should reduce barriers, not create new ones. This motion asks us to step back and look at the whole picture, not to point fingers, not to predetermine outcomes, but to ask whether our current approach currently serves the people it was designated for. Are we making it easier for residents to understand their options? Are subsidies being used in ways to maximize real access? Are new services being integrated in a way that simplifies the experience, or are we unintentionally layering confusion on top of confusion? As we plan for future transit innovations, we have an opportunity to build accessibility from the start rather than retrofitting it later. That opportunity only works if we understand what's working, what isn't, and where people are falling through the cracks. Ultimately, this motion is about the city we want to be, a city where accessible transportation is understandable, coordinated, and dignified, a city where independence is supported, not eroded by confusing procedures, a city where inclusion is reflected not just in our values, but in how people experience daily life, and a city that is a leader in accessibility and inclusion where everyone belongs.
City staff are expected to report back to council with preliminary options for expanded accessible transportation services by the fourth quarter of 2026. At their last meeting, council passed an advocacy-based motion about measles vaccination awareness. This motion comes after the Pan American Health Organization notified the Public Health Agency of Canada that Canada has lost its measles elimination status due to sustained transmission over more than 1 year. According to Ontario Public Health, between 2013 and 2023, Ontario reported a total of 101 measles cases. In 2025 alone, there were 2,395 reported cases in the province. Local data from Southeast Public Health indicates higher vaccination rates in the KFLNA region, with an overall regional measles immunization coverage of 90.7% among the school-age population. However, the motion was brought forward with the concern of overall declining vaccination rates, vaccine misinformation, and the disruption of routine immunizations during the COVID-19 pandemic. Specifically, the motion asks that council affirm the safety and effectiveness of the vaccine, encourage residents to verify their vaccination status with their healthcare provider or Southeast Public Health, and urge the public to rely on credible health information and avoid sources that promote vaccine misinformation. Councillor Jeff McLaren brought the motion before council, seconded by Councillor Connie Glenn.
It came to my attention through Public Health that Canada lost our measles elimination late last year, around November is when I heard about it. And then we talked about why this was happening. A lot of it might be some of the misinformation that's coming from south of the border and all of that. But it is a little bit embarrassing that we, a first world country with a first class healthcare system, lost this designation. It's been the first time we've done it in almost 30 years, 20 to 30 years was the last time that we had lost this. And this is dangerous. It is critically important for the health of our country and our community to get to make sure you've been vaccinated. It is a lifelong immunity, but if you haven't been vaccinated, you will be transmitting this. And if you thought COVID was bad and we don't have herd immunity, it's going to be worse for those who get it. The least, the smallest, the most mild symptoms are life-threatening.
One of the reasons for talking about this, although we have a high vaccination rate here in KFNLA, is the concept of herd immunity means that we're also protecting those who cannot be vaccinated. There are individuals that are allergic to vaccinations, small children who have yet to receive one are at high risk. So putting this out there is really to remind us as a community that we have a duty of care to one another. And I think it was quite shocking to a number of individuals in the healthcare community to see us lose that elimination status. Again, this is one of the most communicable diseases on the planet. We can't continue to be complacent. We need to make sure that we continue to re-message to make sure that everyone is understanding the importance of continuing to keep up to date with vaccinations, measles and others. But right now, I'd like to see Canada regain its elimination status in short order. And we can do that if we continue to message out on as many channels as possible.
The motion was carried with a vote of 12 to 1, with the sole opposing vote coming from Councillor Gary Osteroff. Messaging about the measles vaccine will be posted through the city's communication channels in coordination with Southeast Public Health's public information efforts. Before we wrap up this morning, we're going to run through your Friday forecast, a roundup of just some of the events Kingston has to offer this weekend, put together by CFRC's newest intern, Gigi. Tonight, Friday, January 30th, the Kingston Frontenacs are looking to win their seventh consecutive home game. The Fronts play the Sudbury Wolves at Slush Puppy Place at 7 p.m. Bring your friends and let them know, go Fronts go. The Grand Shanghai Circus will also be performing at the Kingston Grand Theater in the Rosen Auditorium at 7:30 p.m. tonight. Pull on your cowboy boots and sing the rest of the night away with Friday Night Karaoke at the Buckles starting at 9 p.m. Tomorrow on Saturday, January 31st, support local vendors at the Kingston Public Market in Springer Market Square, open from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. If you're looking to enjoy some local drag this weekend, Drag in the Water, drag show with Eden Moore, Sherry Ann Hex, Rip M, and Dare De La Femme at Something in the Water at 8 p.m. tomorrow night. Last but certainly not least, on Sunday, February 1st, swing by the Memorial Center Farmers Market from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. for fresh foods and to show your support for local vendors. To wrap up the weekend, you can head to Trivia at the Merchant at 8 p.m. and if you're down for a later night, karaoke at the Toucan at 10:30 p.m. That is your Friday forecast. Once again, that was just some of the events and concerts coming up this weekend in the region. Be sure to head to CFRC.ca for our full events and concerts listings, once again put together by our newest intern, Gigi. If you have an event or concert that you'd like to add to our online or on-air calendar, reach out today via CFRC.ca or at CFRC Music on Instagram using the link tree in our bio. That is all things current in Kingston for this week. Thank you for listening to CFRC's local news programming brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, and the Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. To listen on the go and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
Thank you. coming up now on this week's Release Radar in partnership with the Kingston Music Office. We're pleased to present a new single by Ethan Churchill called Big Bad Rose, a departure from the more intimate coffee house vibes of Ethan's 2022 Coffee Dates and Superstores. This single brings a raw, tongue-in-cheek rock and roll energy that just compels you to strut your stuff. And stay tuned, Ethan's new album, The Bloody Monster Club, drops January 30th. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Big Bad Rose by Ethan Churchill now on your favorite platforms and enjoy it here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Into a world where stories meet sound. My name is Simmer Kaur, host of Melodies of Myth, a show that blends Indian classical and Western music with short tales of culture, history, and identity. Join me every Friday at 3 p.m. only on CFRC. And if you enjoy the music, you can find more by searching Simmer Kaur on Spotify. Tune in, unwind, and let the melodies carry you. Once again, it's Melodies of Myth, 3 p.m. every Fridays.
No Static, every Monday from 6 to 8 on CFRC. Every Monday from 6 to 8 on CFRC 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca. You never know what you're gonna get. CFRC's most varied variety show. You never know what you're gonna get.